M19. Number 3B.
Yes, so what I want to say is something that you can now understand. Namely, that Mrs. Eddy was a scientist of a caliber that was 100, 200 years in advance of her age, and not the other way around. That she wrote the textbook not on the scientific basis of the last century, but that her science, as we have seen, is a structural sense of science. Second, her logic is the logic that comes up now, only now in the world. The trans-classical logic that is solving all those apparent contradictions that Mrs. Eddy seems to make, and that the ordinary logical thinker finds in the book. It is that logic which is also called the dimensional logic. What it means, don't bother about it. Don't worry about it. I only want to show you what caliber Mrs. Eddy was. Namely, and this was the next step we found that with those two big categories, the synonymous term defining the nature of God, the second category, Word, Christ, Christianity and Science, defining the operational sense of God, is not enough. They don't really answer the apparent paradoxical, contradictory statements. Why? Because we need a third big category, and Mrs. Eddy had them. If you have noticed in the textbook that Mrs. Eddy uses science in different ways. Namely, she uses science just as itself, as science, the term, as science. But then she uses also divine science. That's another level, divine science. She speaks about absolute Christian science, and she speaks about Christian science. Now, these are not literal embellishments, that for one time you think, oh, I can't now write science again, I have written that a few lines above science, so this time I write divine science, it's a bit nicer, or another time, oh, I think I write now Christian science, it makes it more fluent in reading and so on. No, these were very clearly defined levels of consciousness. Namely, those levels in science where science is just science itself, which doesn't bother anything about man and humanity and sickness and sin and I don't know what. Science is just per se the one being. But if you talk about divine science, then you talk about something quite different. Namely, about the divine of that science. Therefore, about the whole oneness of being and the infinite realm of that one being. But then she talks about absolute Christian science, she speaks about something very different. Namely, about the relationship which exists between principle and idea. Then that relationship is defined through absolute statements of Christian science. And then she uses the term Christian science alone. It's always something completely different, namely the relationship which exists between truth and its opposite. And you can see that these are four completely different fields of investigation, fields of reality. And according to the problem stated, you would see it under either Christian science or absolute Christian science or divine science or science itself. And then she shows that each one of these altitude of consciousness have their own laws, have their own practice, their own healing practice, have their own purpose naturally, and therefore show, and this is the point, that there is a hierarchical order of science, divine science, absolute Christian science, and this is the reason why science, which does not know anything about error, can correct error. Because it gives a sense that the infinite science can translate itself right down to the possibility of correcting its opposite. Well, don't bother. I would be surprised if you have understood what I said. I don't expect that you have understood me. But you have felt something. That you have felt something. That there is in that textbook something which is of much greater magnitude than what we were thinking, perhaps up to today. That there is actually in that textbook a completely new system of reference, a divine system of reference. What do I mean by that? Again, let's take as an illustration arithmetic. This is always a good illustration. What makes up, say, mathematics? Well, you know, there is one category, namely the digits. You have to have your digits. Without digits, you can't count. But you also have to have a second category, namely the operational sense. Addition, subtraction, multiplication, division, and so on. That's your second category. But then you also know, or perhaps you don't know, but in school, then you have also learned that these can be used in various fields of mathematics. It's used in arithmetic, it's used in algebra, it's used in trigonometry, it's used in differential calculus, in integral calculus. Can you see? There are many different fields in which the same fundamentals are used. Even if you go to calculus, still your digits are necessary, still your four operational modes are the same, they don't change, but they are used in a different realm, in a different level, and that is what Mrs. Eddy saw with that third category of the four levels of science. I have written a book on that alone, so you can read that. And now, if one puts all this together like this, you see, it isn't so that the digits stand here, and then here are four operational senses, and over there somewhere, then the dimensional sense. See, they all go into each other like this and make one web of consistency. That's what Mrs. Eddy says in the 11th chapter. He says, Christian science grows out of one root, God, as one web of consistency. It's all weaved into each other like this. And that makes structure. Here you have relationship of the elements and the operational sense and the dimensional sense all in one. And that's one being, but an infinitely differentiated one being. And you get it. And you have it. You can ask me, well, that may be your concept of a system. No, it is not my concept. Because of why? Because these are the categories that Mrs. Eddy capitalizes. And these are the only categories that Mrs. Eddy capitalizes. Therefore, her language is the language of the capitalized terms. And that is what she called the new language, the language of spirit. So can you see, we are not making up something. We are not construing something. We take only what Mrs. Eddy had in her textbook, namely that she used a new language of the capitalized term, and the language of the capitalized term means something completely different than when these terms are used in ordinary language. And in this way she could use language really to convey the divine infinite calculus of that one being. Isn't it beautiful? You don't seem to be. I thought I was telling you the most beautiful thing in the world. Yeah? Well, I don't envy you, you know. If I had been sitting here, say, 40 or 50 years ago, and wouldn't have known anything about it, I would I think I wouldn't have grasped it. But we are living in another age where people are ready to think and to think intelligently on a higher level. And I think it is just that what is needed is to open up thought that there is something else, but to get hold of it is another question. That is work, work, work. Watch and pray. That's the song of Christian Science. We can't get around that song. That's the only song that we should sing together. All the hymnals beside that is very little compared with the song of Christian Science. To work and to work and to work. There's nothing more beautiful than to investigate a textbook this way. Now, you can ask me now, what's the good of it? What's the good of all of that? Huh? Well, the good of all that is quite big. First of all, what were the immediate results of it? And interestingly enough, the immediate result of it was that this new system, that this divine system of reference, was opening up the Bible. It was not opening up right away the textbook itself, the structure of the textbook itself, but interestingly enough, it was opening up the Bible as a science. How? How? Well, you know, you all love the Bible. Do you love the Bible because you can read it? Oh no. You love the Bible because you interpret it. Because you find a spiritual interpretation in the Bible. Don't you? That's why you like it. How many interpretation of a Bible book or chapter do we have in the world? Some hundred or million, wouldn't we? The libraries are full of interpretation. If you want to know what Matthew is, you can go into the library and pick out a few thousand books interpreting Matthew. Each one interprets it differently. Is that any good? Is that science? Is that science if you can take any subject and everybody can interpret it the way he likes it? This is not science. They call it inspiration, but it isn't. It's just their subconsciousness that comes up. And that subconsciousness is a collective belief, usually. This is not science. What the Bible teaches us is a divine principle, and there is only one interpretation of the Bible. Which one of those 100,000 who have interpreted the Bible is right? Well, I can't say it's A or B or C. I can only say only that one is right which interprets the Bible from the divine principle in such a way that the interpretation is conformed to the system of that principle. Shall I repeat that? Huh? You see? Usually what people do, they say, I take the text and interpret it the way I see it, the way I see it, and I got quite an inspiration of it. I got quite a revelation of it. And the next one next door reads also, gets also a revelation, and it's different, completely different. Is then the principle of being changeable? Doesn't the principle of being mean something and not something else? If it is a principle, it must always find only its own interpretation. Therefore, only that interpretation is right, which interprets from the one divine principle within the system of that principle, within the categories of that principle, in order to bring out the consistency of the system of that principle. Any other interpretation is a personal interpretation, not a scientific interpretation. And this is the terrific thing that John Dolly did. That he didn't interpret the Bible just inspirationally. He took the divine system He took the principle of that divine system and interpreted the Bible according to the categories of being. And so all his interpretations come out, when they are gone through the interpretation process, they come out as showing either the order of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love, or showing the order of word, Christ, Christianity, and science, or showing the order of science, divine science, up to Christian science. You see, it interprets itself by remaining within the system of that principle. Then we can truly say principle interprets itself. Then it isn't people interpreting the principle. Now this is quite terrific. Therefore, when we have John Dorley's interpretation of the Bible, it isn't now the 10,001 interpretation. It is not in the same category of individual inspiration. It's of an absolutely new category which one didn't have up to now. Through all the history, we didn't have an interpretation of the Bible on the ground of the principle itself. And bringing out what? The system of the principle as the outcome of the interpretation. It's terrific. It's quite terrific. And therefore, what... Yeah? Oh, gosh. Therefore, can you see? Isn't it terrific? You read one of the books in the Bible. You read, say, Samuel. It's a long one. I took a long one. Huh? Two books on Samuel. When you read it, do you know what you have read? No. You only know atomistic truth. You know the little story about David and Goliath. Huh? You know the little story about David and Bathsheba and so on. Huh? All these little, tiny, little stories you may remember. But can you know, when you have finished that whole book, say, now, what is the law that runs from the first verse right through to the last verse? What is the law in it? What is the order in it? The spiritual order in it. Not the textual order. The spiritual order, what was the spiritual message in it? You can't. But when you know the synonymous term, and I have a good grasp of the spiritual meaning of the synonymous term, you read it not as words, but as these spiritual values and see the order. And therefore, when you read a book like that, you can close it and then you can say, I tell you what is in it. I could tell you right now what is in the two books of Samuel, a wonderful story, you know, I could tell you right now and say how it starts with mind, and what the idea of mind is brought out, and what how it follows up to the ideas of spirit, and what is in there, and the soul, and principle, life, truth, and love, and what the story is. You know it now afterwards. Otherwise, you can't know it. Isn't that terrific? Just as in math, in arithmetic, you see. In arithmetic, you have learned in your life perhaps 10,000 of different arithmetical problems, additions and subtractions and multiplication, haven't you? Well, you don't remember them. You don't need to, because that's not interesting. What is interesting is that you know the system of it, so that you can calculate always new. It is terrific. So that little by little the Bible just yielded its science. Its science. Showing that the whole Bible as a whole has a terrific order. That the whole Bible has an order of first 1,000-year period of mind, 1,000-year period of spirit, and 1,000-year period of soul. And you, when you read the Bible, you just can see from this verse only changes, from one synonymous term to the other, if you have the spiritual tone of it. You see? This is now the spiritual language with which we can read the Bible. And we read it in a science. So that every book in the Bible has a wonderful structure. See? For instance, you have four Gospels. Why should you have four Gospels if you can tell the whole story in one? Why make it more difficult? Huh? It's all about Jesus and what he did. Four chaps were writing on it. And they were writing completely different. Why? Can't we put them together in a synopsis? That's what theology tries to do, which is absolutely wrong. As if you would try to put addition, subtraction, multiplication, division into one thing. Because Matthew tells the story of Jesus as the Word. Mark tells the story of Jesus as the Christ. Luke tells the story of Jesus as Christianity. And John, that wonderful young man John, you know, he wrote the story of Jesus as science. That's why it is so different than the other ones. And in that order. Isn't it terrific? Can you see how the whole Bible becomes a scientific textbook, a book with spiritual laws, and no more just stories? And do you remember what Mrs. Eddy says? She says, another prediction. She says, I foresee and foresay. Yeah, that's prophecy. She says, I foresee and foresay that every advancing period of truth, there are advancing periods, it's not always the same rut, will be characterized by a more spiritual apprehension of the scriptures. What John Dolly gave in those 13 volumes on the Bible, you can read them, is actually a more spiritual apprehension of the scripture. That will show their marked consonance with the textbook. Do you see that? The textbook is nothing else but the presentation of the divine system of reference with those three great categories. What is the Bible? The same thing. The big book presenting the same system of reference in the language of yesterday, but the truth in this is the same. So he, John Dolly, shows in those books the marked, what he says here, the marked consonance with the textbook. Interpreting the word in the new tongue. You see, you couldn't do it except we will find the new tongue of the seventh synonymous term. Interpreting the word in the new tongue evokes new paraphrases from the world of Boston? No, from the world of letters. From the world of lessons. And then you try to, what is the term, to say you are not allowed to write and not allowed to teach. You have a discovery that surpasses by a half a century everything that was being thought of. And you should shut up. But John Dolly didn't shut up. Thank God. Huh? It demands these new paraphrases from the word of letter. Yeah. And naturally, the second big thing that happened then in the 50s, and I will talk about that tomorrow, is that suddenly then the structure of the whole textbook became apparent. That the whole structure, like the Bible, is a terrific presentation of the divine system of reference, and I will talk about it tomorrow. So, which again shows that what Mrs. Eddy foresaw, that she said in the 50s there will be a presentation which raises up the standard of Christian science. And it happened. Actually, it always happens in a little cradle, unknown by the world. Always. Thank God. Or it would be killed by the herods. So we can see, to finish up, can you see that Mrs. Eddy was really a scientist of the greatest caliber, far in advance of her age. And actually it's awful. When one hears from the authentic literature that comes out, things like the following, that Mrs. Eddy's use of the term science is clearly congruent with its general use in late 19th century, that she had only a pragmatic sense of science. This itself to the Christian Scientist today. Whereas she was a scientist that was 100, 200 years in advance of her age. That they can state to the Christian Scientist that her system is far from rigorously systematic in character. And that a reduction to a closed system was impossible. Can you see that you run down the whole textbook? That you criticize the whole textbook by bringing up these funny concepts? Whereas that denies Mrs. Eddy as a scientist of great caliber. It puts her right back as a little tiny little woman that had a pragmatic sense of something. So a movement that supports that old sense cannot survive. It is impossible. You cannot kill the textbook and build on the textbook. This is not possible. And therefore, we must see that we advance, that we go ahead. Mrs. Eddy was always in advance of the age. She always was conversing with the foremost thinkers of her age. And you read the old journals, she was constantly in discussion with what was going on in every field of science, of every advancing sense of science. And today, the science in the world, the various fields of science today, not even take notice of what we are. They consider us as a religious cult, a little insignificant religious cult. That's all what we are in the eyes of the world. We are no more there where the progressive thinkers are. When today in America you have this terrific consciousness evolution, that terrific consciousness mutation, where they have symposiums and conferences on consciousness expansion and consciousness, expansion, yes, and the revolution. Christian Science is not there. There where we could help, we are not there. Because we not even understand what they want to say. And so we must see that there is a definite need of the hour which we have to consider. And that need of the hour is we all know that the Christian Science movement is in a state of malaise. But don't blame Boston. Don't blame them. That's my conviction. If we were there, would we do better? I don't know if we would be better. But the crux of everything is not with the government. The crux is with the movement, with us, with the individual. The individual Christian Scientist is responsible for this discovery. He must stand up for the truth. He must stand up for progress. He must not turn his back on progress. Therefore, it's up to us that we have enough courage and loyalty to principle to stand for this idea, for every progressive idea, even if that progressive idea is not quite right yet. That's in the nature of everything. We don't need to be afraid of any mistake we make. The main thing is that we go forward. And if there is a mistake in it, it will sort itself out very naturally. But to hang on to the old and stay in the old ruts doesn't do anything. And to blame somebody else, like Boston, doesn't do anything. I blame the movement. I blame the individual Christian Scientist. He has the right. He has man's right. He lives in a country like America, who stands for man's right, and he lets to take away and rob from him his first birthrights, the right for information, the right to listen to everybody, the right to read what he wants to read. That is taken away. Why let you take that away? You stand for, in the whole world, you stand for man's right. You fight against everybody for man's right, but in your country, are you fighting for your man's right? No, huh? You don't. That's the trouble. You are an individual, you are alone with God, and you stand alone with God, you are loyal to God, and you are loyal to principle, and stand with that principle, and you can't fall when you stand with principle. That's what is needed. That's that. Okay.